North Florida, John and Newberry, he had 32 degrees on Wednesday.
Wow.
But then it warms up and we're in the 70s and 80s, depending on where you are in the state. Lots of great gardening weather and getting ready to plant your garden vegetables this week. So I love this time of the year, and it is wonderful to get out. But also, too, it's a good time to be doing some updating on your maintenance for your landscaping. So we have a great question from John in Palm Bay. So I'm going to combine all of that when we start to talk about it. But I think it's time for the dirty word of the day.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is dichogamy. Dichogamy, and it means, well, let me explain it a little differently today. Avocados have both male and female sexual organs. These organs, however, don't function at the same time, meaning that the avocado flowers are active at different times of the day. This is a characteristic that in botany is called dichogamy. Dichogamy is defined as the production of male and female reproductive elements at different times by a hermaphroditic organism in order to ensure cross-fertilization. Now, this term was introduced by the German naturalist Christian Conrad Sprengel in the 18th century. We have our type A flowers for avocados that are female in the morning and male in the afternoon. Type A trees produce flowers that open in the morning to receive pollen, and then they close and then open again the next morning to complete the pollination cycle. In the afternoon or evening, while the female organs are shut, the flowers open as males in order to shed the pollen. So type A avocados include Choquette, Gwen, Haas, and Lula, Maloma, Mexicola, Pinkerton, and Reed. Now, type B avocados, on the other hand, produce flowers that are open in the evening and in the afternoon as females to receive pollen, which is the exact opposite of type A. They close back up and then reopen in the morning, now as male flowers to shed the pollen. Within the type B avocados, there are the following common types. Bacon avocado, that just sounds wonderful, doesn't it? I've never seen one, but bacon avocado. Bacon, Brogdon, Edinger, Ferté, Monroe, Charwil, Surprise, and Zutano. So the dirty word of the day is dichogamy. D-I-C-H-O-G-A-M-Y. I just thought it was appropriate for Valentine's Day.
I think that's very interesting, but can we go back to the amount of work it takes to change from one to the other? That's a lot of work.
That is. Mother Nature is just fascinating.
She is.
And so it is an effort. And so this is usually why we talk about having, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 different avocados so that you can get that cross-pollination there. Because avocados are pollinated by wind. And so that helps. And even just it falling down from the pollen. I was showing Tony with my car yesterday. My car is all yellow on the outside from the pollen. And have you ever noticed it on your cars?
Yeah, last week whenever I was out.
Yes.
It was green and yellow.
Green and yellow. So that is the pollen that is around. And so if you are allergic to plants, it's important for you to, if you're designing your landscape, to have more female plants than male, because the male is the one that causes the allergies with his pollen. So female plants are preferred in landscapes that you have allergies. But if you're living on a street or in a community and there is one down the plant down the street that's caught, you know, creating pollen, then it's just by the wind, it's going to be in your yard. So what kind of bulbs can you be planting right now? Well, I'm telling you, bulbs are wonderful to plant because they reproduce and give you more plants. I love that. You don't have to buy more. So the ones that that you can plant right now are African irises, amaryllis, Amazon lilies, Asiatic lilies, blackberry lilies, blood lilies, bulbine, caladiums, cannas and crinums, day lilies and gladiolus. And gladiolus can be planted like the sunflower. You can plant them in, every other week. You know, just keep planting more gladiolus, and they will have successive blooms throughout the, spring and summer. Gloriosa lilies and Louisiana irises, the apostle iris, society garlic, spider lilies, and rain lilies. I absolutely adore rain lilies. They come in all different colors, from white to pink, from white with pink throats, pink with white throats, yellows and oranges. The yellows look like crocuses. I love them. And they bloom at different times of the year. They bloom a little bit later in the summertime than the other lilies. And then Florida has a native rain lily called an Adamasco. And it is gorgeous. And you can see it blooming in the late spring, early summer. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. The Chocolate Botanist is coming right up. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. So he's known affectionately as the Chocolate Botanist on Instagram and social media. He has 50,000 followers. He has been featured in The Guardian, Life Hackers, and guests on Black in the Garden and in Defense of Plants. He's originally from New Bern, North Carolina, and a graduate from North Carolina State University in plant biology. His background includes vaccine and therapeutics development using non-traditional plant-based technology. Derek is also on the board of directors as the the North Carolina Botanic Garden. Thank you for coming on this morning, Derek. How are you?
Teresa, I am phenomenal. How are you?
I am great. Valentine's Day is coming up, Derek, and I thought you would be the perfect person to talk about it, and you're so much fun to interact with. We met through a Garden Communicators event, and I knew I wanted you to come on. So tell us a little bit about your botanical background and your work and advocacy goals.
Well, you know, I am a whole plant biologist. I got, like you said, my degree from North Carolina State University. And as a child, I've always loved plants. And as a grown man, I want people to share that same love, to be able to find people who have that love, and to be able to grit Black youth who want to be in a botany or any STEM position to be able to know that there's somebody out here doing what they want to do.
That's wonderful. So tell us, your passion seems not only with plants, but communication. So how did you fall in love with plants when you were younger? How was that communicated to you?
You know, I think it was seeing my grandmother's pothos that she used to grow. It seemed like it just stretched forever around the trailer. And growing up back in the 90s, where everything was a sepia color, the plant life of the 90s was just amazing to me back home. So I just grew connected to them.
Wonderful. And so Wednesday is Valentine's Day. How can we use plants to communicate love?
That is a very good, question. Plants can be used to convey so much, right? So when you are trying to give the one you love some type of plant thing, you could, of course, go with cut flowers, right?
Yeah.
You could, of course, give them roses or daisies or sunflowers. I like sunflowers. But you could also give them an actual, like, rose plant, right? Figure out what zone you're in. Figure out what living flowers you could put in front of their house as the love lives, the plants bloom and blossom and propagate, and you can go from there. Or you could just simply give them chocolate. That's a plant, too.
That's right. You can give them a cacao plant. That's wonderful. And so what are some of the different flowers and what they symbolize? What do you know about that?
So different flower colors have typically different meanings when it comes to how we are presenting love or sympathy or empathy to people, right? So when I'm giving a red rose to the person that I love, that's love and admiration, right? We are used to that, right? We may see different colors mixed in the bouquet, but they, again, have different meanings. Yellow can sometimes be used to mean friendship. It's not an intimate love. White could be new love. If we're doing any shade of orange, it could be fascination or thanks and gratitude. Some of the pinks can also represent gratitude or grief. So there are different connotations that these flowers carry, and they speak for us.
So your mantra is plants offer so much more than home decor. And so what else do they provide?
When it comes to plants, they, for me, are a place of peace. Like when I come home after a day of work, after a day of grief or even joy, my plants are like my cheerleaders showing me how I am doing, right? If I am having a good time, if I'm feeling great, my plants are looking beautiful. And if I'm not feeling so great, I'm not taking care of my plants and they may not be looking so beautiful, right? So they offer me a place of self-reflection. In addition to, they offer me a place of escape, right? Mm-hmm. I can repot my plants or repot plants I'm giving to people and support myself and my own mental health and myself, Claire. So these plants are literally just like sentinels of peace, giving us the peace that we deserve as we cultivate them in ourselves.
Right. And so even digging in the dirt makes you feel better. There's it raises our pheromones. And so as a botanist, your work, how did you find the work that you're doing to be compatible with plants?
The work that I'm doing, when it comes to, like you said, digging in the dirt, it is literally a self-care activity. It's literally soothing to me. So I knew that anything I want to do has to be related to plants, has to be related to dirt. So with the work that I do and the way that I love plants, I just wanted to show people my cool plants and my plant knowledge, right?
Right.
But that eventually evolved into me finding a community of people who were all crazy plant people like me, mm-hmm. right? Who all grew however many hundred plants or five plants or whatever, and who we could all geek out with. We can go and hang out. You know, most people hang out at the club. I might hang out at a Home Depot or a garden center. and we could just meet and talk about plants and show off pictures of our plants, like people show off pictures of their children and yeah. their grandchildren.
That is a trend right now with the younger generation, with the Gen Z, is talking about their plants and caring for them like children.
It really is. These are my children. When I lose one of my plants, I am hurt. I may not have a full funeral because people think I'm acting up a little too much. They think I'm being a little too dramatic, but don't think I haven't considered it.
You know, your compost pile, and you can kind of put little gravestones on your compost pile.
Look, you're giving me all types of ideas now.
So I love that. So when you're a botanist, a plant botanist, how did you get, because we're talking about you're an advocate for young Black children going, you know, school-age children, getting them into sciences. You didn't see that growing up. So how are you, how do you make that effort to impress upon the school-age children that they can do, that they can have a career in science?
I tell them that science isn't always complicated. and the science is not as boring as it may be presented to you in your schools, right? And this is nothing against teachers, because they have a lot that they have to juggle, right? But because I don't have that curriculum that I'm kind of handcuffed to, I can show them the cool and the fun stuff and then sneak, you know, the hard or difficult stuff in underneath. I might throw a term in under, you know, and throw in a big word or a big concept. It's like when you're cooking food for children and you hide the vegetables in the food they didn't notice. It's something like that. So I literally try to show them that, in addition to letting them know, like, this is what I do. I am a plant biologist. I am a botanist. I am 6'2". I sometimes have a big beard. I have locks. I am not what is traditionally looked at as a scientist. When you think of a picture of a scientist, I don't often wear lab coats. I'm not, you know, with beakers and test tubes, because that's mostly chemistry.
Yes.
I am non-traditional. And that person, that child, can grow up to be a non-traditional scientist. And I want them to see me, to see that, and to know, look, I'm here for you. And there's been not only school-age children, but even those who are going into college or who are in college who have hit me up and are like, hey, we are trying to do whatever. We're trying to do this, and it's hard. And I speak to them, you know, give them a little time, and tell them I'm here.
There you go. And so how can parents encourage their children if they see a their child, whether it's a boy or a girl, and they're interested in plants? How can they encourage that love and get them to become, you know, to grow as a scientist?
You know, you encourage that love by doing it with them. When you are making those core memories with your children, it can mean the world to them later in life. I can think of looking at the plant stuff with my family, planting roses for my grandmother when I was 16, telling them all my crazy science ideas as a child, and getting that literally listening and that support. Now, children can just talk forever. I'm God knows I can talk for a million hours in a day. But listen to them and hear them out, and then when you see them, support them. My grandmother used to buy all these little I forget what it was called, but back in the day, you could go to like QVC,
yes,
and like the life books and everything.
Sure.
And she would literally purchase all this mail order science, because I said I want to be a scientist. And I remember that to this day. And I have those references that I can give. Granted, now you could just go to Amazon and get it in a day, but she had to be ordering stuff all the time for me to get the stuff as often as I was getting it in the 90s. You know what I mean? So support your children and invest that money when you can.
Okay, so do you have any plans for Valentine's Day?
You know, I am going to actually be preparing for the Northwest Flower and Garden Show. So my Valentine's Day plans are kind of going to be boring. I'm not going to sit at home. But if any of you have beautiful plant Valentine's Day, I would love to live vicariously through you. So just DM me what y'all are doing.
That's wonderful. So you have followers, 10,000 followers on Instagram, and you have a social media. So how can people find out more about the Chocolate Botanist? Where can they find you?
So you can go to my website at thechocolatebotanist.com. You can find me on Instagram. That is the main hub I'm on, but I am on all social media platforms.
There you go. Derek, thank you so much for coming on. I just love your philosophy and encouraging children. And Valentine's Day was the language of love from flowers. It's a good way to get students. So, again, tell us your website again.
Thechocolatebotanist.com.
There you go. You have to go on and see him. He's just a handsome guy.
Oh, I'm going on right now, and I'm going to follow him on Instagram. So
there you go.
Yes, I'm excited.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much, Derek. I have a son, Derek, so I just love your name. So you have a great weekend. Happy Valentine's Day. Tell everybody on the West Coast I said hello.
I shall. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Derek. Thank you. Bye-bye. It's a great show, yes. The Northwest Flower Show, Garden Show, and it's big on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And just wonderful to go to. So.
And what I appreciate is that what he said about his grandmother and stuff, and as a grandmother, I try to do little things with my grand brats and get them really interested in this.
I love how you're so comforting and supportive of your grand brats.
Thanks.
I love that. No, it's important to plant memories, and I tried to do that too with my children growing up. So they pulled weeds, and it wasn't until they became an adult and their children pulled weeds that they appreciated me. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If you know someone who loves to garden or has a question, please let them know about Better Lawns and Gardens. We're on every Saturday from 7 to 9 a.m. And you can hear the show on podcast on betterlawns.com, on our any iHeartRadio station. And you can also hear it on in your favorite podcast, wherever you listen to that. If you'd like to give me a call and ask your gardening question, 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text me at 23680. I want to thank Derek Haynes for coming on, thechocolatebotanist.com. Mm-hmm. You can go to him, and he's just very interesting.
He is funny.
He is.
He is funny.
And so I do appreciate it. I want to clarify, Mark from Winter Garden texted, and he wanted to know what the blue liquid from the St. Augustine that the lawn company sprayed on his lawn, what that herbicide was. And I will tell you, the reason I asked you to email me is because I don't like to willy-nilly give out herbicide information when you have a specific question and want to know what an exact product is for that a company is using, because I don't know. So I would ask different questions and find out a little bit more. So that's the purpose of the email. But the blue liquid, when you're talking about the blue liquid, it could be any herbicide. All that is a color dye so that they know where they've sprayed, so that they know that the herbicide got in the area that needed to be on. That's why you'll sometimes see it on the road as you're driving along, and you'll see the blue liquid because they went right along the edge of the road and sprayed the herbicide there. So it just depends. You can always ask your lawn company what they're using. If you can't get a hold of them, though, I would just say that you don't need to find out what they used. You need to know your plant, your grass type, variety, what kind of St. Augustine or Bahia grass or what type of grass you have, and then find the product that works with that turf. So I hope that clarifies it a little bit, Mark, for you. So thank you for the text message. If you have a gardening question, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680, like John in Palm Bay did. He says, you've spoken about pruning crepe myrtles and Hawaiian Thai plants. What is the best time of year for pruning, and what is the significance of the diagonal cut? He said, thank you. Well, thank you for texting and listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, John. So it depends on the variety of plant, shrub, or tree that you are pruning. So right now, what needs to be pruned is that you could be pruning your ornamental grasses. All the grasses that have the brown leaves, you can cut those down to 4 to 5 inches down on the ground. You could cut back some of your fruit trees, depending on the variety. Now, the ones that are dormant, you can cut back, like your peaches and your pears and apples. You can be cutting those back right now. But you don't want to be cutting back your tropical fruit trees, because if we do get a freeze, pruning stimulates growth, and that new growth will not be hardened off and will be more susceptible to any freezes. So there is timing throughout the year for all the individual plant species. Now, crepe myrtles, when we're talking about pruning, you can prune any plant year-round if there is a branch going the wrong way, if it's sticking out over a path, you know, if the tree is too low. You can cut back parts of the shrub, tree, or plant that you don't want any time of the year. Okay, but you don't want to be cutting your spring-blooming plants and shrubs like your camellias and your azaleas after the month of June, because they are producing flowers for next year starting in the late summer. And when you're cutting back plants every month or every couple of months, then you're going to be cutting off blooms. I see Laura petalums all the time cut in straight rows like hedges, straight hedges, when they are a mounding plant or a taller and wider shrub. And they're cutting them all the time because they would be in the way of people walking by. But they're cutting off these beautiful blooms so nobody ever gets to see that they have wonderful flowers. So it depends on the variety of species of plant, John. So Hawaiian Thais are tropical, so I would not cut them after the October unless you're down in Key West or in South Florida, and we're not going to get any freezes there. So you could cut those back. that time. But here, as we go into Central Florida and go into North Florida, you're going to want to determine if we're going to be getting a freeze soon. You don't want to cut before that. So I hope that makes a little bit sense. Now, you can always follow my month-to-month gardening on betterlawns.com, the calendar, and I will tell you on that calendar what to do that month and if it involves pruning any of the plants, okay? So then you're talking about the diagonal cut. So plants have a circulation system, the xylem and the phloem, and it comes up and goes around throughout the parts of the plant. When we cut an area over and over again, it can build up scar tissue and damage and sometimes can actually kill the plant. It can get twig dieback in areas that are cut frequently in the same place. The diagonal cut allows for the circulation to go up and go around again, and it doesn't stop the circulation flow. So when you're cutting back plants, cutting it on a diagonal, especially if it's a shrub or tree, you kind of cut it just very slightly diagonal, and you leave a little bit of a collar there so that it can seal it off and grow naturally again, okay? And then you'll have the plant can send out new branches and new limbs based on that cut, that proper cut. Whereas if you cut it straight across, it is going to veer out and you have this portion of the stem that's straight across and it looks ugly and it doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't grow out
right
the same. Do you know that little cut you see like it's a stick man mm-hmm. and you have this dead portion of the stem in the middle and then the two hands, the two branches are sticking out on the side.
I'm tempted to go get a balloon and just tape it to it and put a smiley face on it.
And so it just looks weird. So hopefully that explains it to you, John. If not, give me a call back.
Also, we had Robert call in from Plant City, okay. I think he called. And he wanted to let the person who was questioning about the blue spray, what it was. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, she's literally talking about this right now. But I love that our callers and our listeners come in and they try to help. And that was the best ever. So,
exactly. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate that. Let's, Michael, hang on. We're going to be talking with you on your question. And we appreciate that. And we have some more text messages. Nancy and Coco, hang on. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. If it's Saturday morning, I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. You still have time for your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Let's go to Michael in Melbourne. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Well, good morning, ma'am, and thank you very much. First of all, happy Valentine's Day to you.
Thank you.
And I have a specific question about an arborist.
Okay.
I have been raising avocados and mangoes, not professionally and not for profit or anything, just as like a hobby. And I'm starting to have some problems with them. I've called it several times here in the last year. But I was just wondering, I hear you talk about arborists and stuff, and I just wonder what the price range, for example, for somebody to come out. I live in the Melbourne area.
Uh-huh.
And then also if, you tell people about your the people you have on as your guests, you know, and I just wondered who I might get in touch with, and
okay.
you know what they look for, and you talk about arborists, but I don't know, you know,
how to find one.
Yeah,
there you go. Well, it's a great question. I'm so glad you asked, Michael. And so there is a website that has a list of all the certified tree arborists in the United States. And you just put in your zip code, and it will bring up every company in your area that has a certified tree arborist. So it's really easy. You just go to treesaregood.org, treesaregood.org. That's treesaregood.org. Put in your zip code, and you will find a professional certified arborist in your area.
So you really don't, you're not, I guess, allowed to maybe recommend a few that we could...
Well, you know, I don't have that information off the top of my head. Okay. And so I mean, I don't have it in front of me. I would have to go to the list and look it up too myself. So I don't know the zip code of Melbourne. And I'm doing a radio show right now, Michael. So
you know. I know, but they're not very professional if they're not calling in and saying, "Hey, you know, this is what we found somewhere, so you could get to know some of them over here." Listen, thank you very much. I will do that.
That's all right. And, yeah, treesaregood.org. Just go in there, put your zip code in, and that will be great. They will.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Michael. Thank you. And so
he's funny.
Yeah, he is. And so it's a great website. Find a professional certified arborist if you want to do any kind of work on your trees. Because there are people out there that just, like the mow and blow guys, that they just do it because they have a chainsaw and a truck. And, you know, those are not necessarily the information. You want to have people that stay up on the current information. Because I will tell you, what I was teaching from the University of Florida, what the information we had back 20 years ago, we're no longer teaching anymore. The science changes. Yeah. And so that goes to every kind of, you know, science industry. Find the current information, find a professional arborist, and you can do it at treesaregood.org. So that's wonderful. So John in Osteen says, how do I get the black mold off of my citrus tree? Very easy. It just sprays right off with a shoot of water. You don't even really need to do anything. Just spray it with water. It will flush slough off. John, John and Osteen. But this is a symptom that you have a bigger issue. The black mold is a symptom, okay, that you have an insect problem. And it could be either whiteflies or aphids, depending on the plant or tree. And so you need to take care of the insect issue first. So I was just at a client's house today, and we had the citrus trees. And I was talking to him, and as we're talking to him, all these little white insects flying around, and it looked like little white flies. Well, that's what they were. They were white flies. And I said, your tree looks good now, but if we don't take care of the white flies, it's not going to look good in a couple of months. So he didn't even notice the insects flying around. So if you go to your plants and you just take your hand and touch it, if it has an insect issue, they will usually just start to fly off, and then you know that you've got an insect issue. But you definitely know you do, John, when you see that black mold. And so go ahead, and you can use neem oil. You can use an insecticidal soap for your product. But identify what you have first. Look to see what kind of insects you have, and then you want to get the insecticide that will take care of it.
That's a pretty good insect because, you know, the fact that it was able to blend in and he wasn't able to see it. So.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You just don't notice it. And this is Florida. There's insects everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the gnats flying around and stuff. But we went and we took our hand and touched the other trees and nothing came up. So it was just on this one tree. But they're in such close proximity to each other that, you know, in a couple of months, if he doesn't take care of this one, they're going to move to the next tree.
Correct.
So, you know, just kind of take notice when you're going by your plants. And I'm constantly doing that. I'm kind of just always, you know, taking my hand and touching things that should be touched. Yeah, you don't want to do that to your agave or your any other cactus.
Rose bushes
and stuff. So thank you, John. That was a great question. So Nancy and Coco says, I have an avocado pit. And it grew, so I transplanted it into a bigger pot. Suddenly, the leaves died off, and new little leaves came out. The new leaves died, and now there are more little leaves. What's going on with it? It's in the southeast window, and she waters it one time a week. So, Nancy, my question to you would be, what kind of pot is it in? What kind of soil? That once-a-week watering may not be enough, so... When it's dying and flushing back out again, and then those leaves die, and then it grows new leaves again, that means there's something in your practices that you're doing that's stressing that plant out. So I would want to know, what kind of pot? Does it have good drainage? Maybe you're not watering enough, or you may be watering too much if it's rotting. So I'm thinking it's not getting enough water, but it also could happen if you're fertilizing it too. So a little bit more about the practices. So I need a little bit more information, Nancy, if you want to text me back real quick. We've only got a few minutes, but if you text me back, I can respond next week to it. If you don't get this message, or you can always go to my website, betterlawns.com, and you can send me the question there. Send me a picture. I love pictures.
Yes.
And we can't take pictures with on our text, but, you know, that would help tremendously. All right. So what can you be doing in your landscape right now? You want to take any of the plants that got any freezes. Okay, we're starting to warm back up again. Remember, the groundhog saw his shadow. So spring is right around the corner. Take a look if you're in zones 10 and 11 and 12 in South Florida. You could start to cut back your any damaged plants that are tropical. And then by the time they flush out, we'll be in March and things will be much better and they won't get freezes anymore. If any of your trees, your spring trees, like your fruit trees, your peaches, your pears, and your plums that are going to start producing flowers, you can cut them right now. But if they produce if you're going to harvest in the late summer, don't cut those back yet. They're still going to need a little bit more growth. So cut back any of your deadhead, any of your irises and African irises and your cannas that are starting to look dilapidated over the wintertime. You can go ahead and cut those back. You can also plant your poinsettias. If you haven't done that yet, you want to make sure that you get those in the ground soon.
Yes.
And then you also want to make sure that you go to Peterson's Nursery for the 9:30 vegetable garden talk in Lakeland and tell Howie and Karen we said hi. And then also, if you want their roses, they're going to have roses ready in 2 to 3 weeks. You want to go online. You're going to have to register for them. They're in such demand. You want to do that. You also want to visit Quality Green Specialists. I sent clients there this week to go and get native trees and fruit trees and edible plants. Quality Green Specialists in DeLand is wonderful. You want to say hi to Dana for me and tell them thank you for sponsoring Better Lawns and Gardens. I want to say thank you to Pam Knox with University of Georgia and her agricultural information for crops and weather for gardening. She was wonderful. And if you missed her interview, you can go online today. We'll be posting it, uploading it to our Facebook page. And then also Derek Haynes, happy Valentine's Day with Derek and the Chocolate Botanist. You can go to his website, thechocolatebotanist.com. And he's a lot of fun. And I really support his advocacy of telling children that they can be scientists.
That's the thing, is that if you're ingraining this into children when they're younger, can you imagine how great that next generation is going to be with growing their own food and having the knowledge of nutrition?
Exactly. It's a wonderful way to educate them, and this is the time. So also, too, I didn't get to my Hoya. There is a plant called a Hoya carry, and it is in the shape of a heart. I brought you one.
I love it.
And it is a climbing plant that grows up to 13 feet tall. It has beautiful, fragrant flowers because it's a Hoya. It's wonderful. It comes from northern Thailand, and it was first discovered in Kew Gardens. It is a wonderful houseplant. I'll talk a little bit more about it next week. If you get one for Valentine's Day, you'll have to listen. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.